You know, the business mix of our downtowns across Wisconsin, I think, has changed a lot over the years. And today we're going to be talking about how communities are working to keep their downtowns vital. Larry Mueller here. So happy to have you with us on the Ideas Network. We have two downtown experts with us today. Aaron Welty, a downtown development account manager with the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, and works with Main Street and Connect Communities and businesses and property owners. She works with them all over the state. Actually, her background is in downtown revitalization, small business development, market analysis, and real estate. And Aaron, thank you so much for being with us today.
Happy to be here.
With us as well, Bill Ryan. Bill works with the UW Extension Center for Community and Economic Development, helps cities and villages across the state conduct in-depth research to guide their business development efforts. And Bill Ryan, thank you as well.
Please thank you, Larry, for the invite.
Yeah, it's great to have you with us. So we'll talk about downtowns and what's going on in downtowns across Wisconsin. There's a great new publication that these folks have put together that I think may give you some ideas about your own community and your own downtown. What about your downtown? Has there been a creative use of empty storefronts? And if you don't live in a town, you're the one closest to you. Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. Aaron, you work for the WEDC as a downtown development accounts manager. Tell us a bit about your work.
Sure. My key pitch to people is that I work in the cutest communities in the state. So I work with all 34 Main Streets and our 64 Connect communities, and only with people who are excited and thrilled to do downtown revitalization work. So it's a great honor to travel the state and work with fun folks.
Oh, it's so much fun, isn't it?
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome and a chance to really do some good. Bill Ryan, what kinds of help do you provide for downtown?
I got the best job in the room here, I think. My job is to go around the state and help our county educators look at their downtowns with the communities and develop a plan for their communities and for the downtown redevelopment efforts. And a lot of it's done through market analysis work, where we look at the market supply and demand conditions, what consumers want today, what competition is looking today, and how can they improve downtown. So we work closely with our organizations in these communities to help develop a plan.
Well, now you work with Aaron and her. How do you guys work together, as a matter of fact?
Well, we worked on this recent publication on small town businesses that make sense. Before that, we worked on another publication on storefront revitalization and what you can do with your storefront to make it more attractive.
And profitable.
And profitable.
And profitable. Yeah, profitable is a key word here, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah, it's as I think about downtowns, I love going through communities like a Watertown, for example, and I drive through and look at that downtown and see lots of cool buildings in the downtown. Sometimes there aren't, you know, there's a building or two, not talking about Watertown necessarily, but there's a building or two or three or sometimes even more that are, there's nobody in there. Yeah. And that's too bad. And I think downtowns, I mean, you ask most people, and I think they'd say, well, our downtown is very important. Why are they important?
I think you hit the nail on the head in the introduction. You know, they're the image of your community. When people drive through, they don't look at the industrial park as to determine how healthy your community is. They look at your downtown, and are there people and shops? And if so, that's a place they want to hang out and want to be.
Yeah, that's very important for economic development. There aren't many jobs, that many jobs in a downtown area. But when a site selector comes into your community to look for a planned location, or a doctor comes in looking for a place for her practice, and they see downtown all shuttered with no restaurants and no businesses, it's going to say, I should go elsewhere and look on another town down the road.
Yeah, I think there's, in terms of attracting people just to the community to come and live there, in terms of, as you were saying, you know, if you're looking to start a business there, you want something that looks vibrant. Well, it is vibrant.
We've had a number of calls this past year from small communities asking for help in getting a restaurant in town because they have doctors coming in to interview for a job and they don't find a place to eat in town. And that turns the doctor away to go to another town, another practice.
Yeah, I can see that. Ryan in Menominee has a question that certainly relates to this. Ryan, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for having me. Hey, so I was wondering, when businesses start to shutter on Main Street, you see a lot of antique shops open up. And I was wondering if that was something that was actually economically profitable, or if that was just an easier business model to start, or what the deal with that was. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Aaron, let me turn to you first. In your experience, I mean, there are a lot of antique shops.
Sure. Yeah, it's a combination of things. So one, antique shops are able to fill big spaces, and that's what's really tough to fill. I mean, the restaurants that we mentioned and, you know, lots of local shops are going to be smaller. So if you have a big old building, antique shops are one way to take advantage of that. And they can be incredibly lucrative if you have several of them. Those people travel and spend money. And I know in Wisconsin we get a lot of dealers from the Chicagoland area that will come up scouring antique shops. So they can be. They're not all, of course.
That's a good point, Aaron, because when you group antique shops together, you create a cluster or a niche for a community, and that could be a destination for tourists.
I can. I was thinking, not this last summer, but the summer before last. I said, well, I thought it'd be fun to look at some antiques in some of these communities that were in a community. And a friend of mine says, "Oh, go to Columbus." We went to Columbus, and there's a huge warehouse that had kind of been a long time ago had been repurposed into kind of an antique store, and then there was another couple of antique places that had also, I think, probably started up in response to that, and sort of a destination. We looked at it and bought some things, had lunch downtown, and spent a few bucks there, stopped at the gas station.
And one thing about antique stores also is that they fit in nicely to the downtown environment. The historic buildings downtown serve that kind of business really well.
Yeah, they don't need a lot of renovations to make it successful.
And you don't need, well, there are other things you don't need, like you don't need water and refrigeration. Well, you need some water, but it's not like a grocery store, for example.
Right, not a lot of renovations necessary.
Yeah. Ryan, I don't know if we're answering your question, are we?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that answers it.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Paul and Merrill up with a comment or question. Hi, Paul.
Hello. I sit on the library board in Merrill, the T.B. Scott Library, and our library has decided to undertake a project of so-called civic engagement, and under the umbrella title of the future of Greater Merrill. And so the library kind of has conceived itself as being the ideal place to initiate this discussion, and at our most recent gathering we had the superintendent of schools and the city manager. We had Art Mersch, who is our extension agent. We had our economic development person from the county and a number of other citizens. And we've only really begun this project, but I want to stress the possibility and even the importance of utilizing your local library as the place by which this whole discussion can proceed through the community.
I don't think you're going to get any argument there. Aaron, in your experience?
Yeah, I mean, today libraries are one of the key anchors of a lot of downtowns. If they're still in downtown, it's the one place that everybody in the community shows up at some point. So it's a great place to start that kind of conversation.
You know, there's a place in Goodyear, Minnesota, that a couple actually bought a bank building and converted it into a library on their own dime for the community. So it's a sitting area, reading area, a comfortable library space that this couple donated to the community. So it's a very important community asset.
Very cool. Thank you very much for calling. You can join in, too. Maybe you've got an experience to share or a question to ask as we talk about new ideas for downtown. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. The Larry Mueller Show, talking with Aaron Welty today and Bill Ryan. Well, let's talk a little bit about this publication. It's called Creative Uses for Downtown Buildings in Small Towns. And what's the genesis of it all? Bill, to start with you.
Sure. That paper was intended to help communities brainstorm and explore different options for downtown. since many of their buildings are empty and vacant. So through a set of questions around the Midwest to different educators and others, we got a list of 25 businesses that we should take a look at. And so this publication here is more of a publication to help stimulate idea thinking for what can work in your town.
Yeah, we all know retail doesn't look like it used to, and we're never going to have five shoe stores in a town of 5,000. But there's lots of things that they can be if people can only think outside the box of what these stores can be good for. So,
and we'll talk about some of the specifics here. But let's go back first. Let's go to Kate in Menasha. Kate, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have two questions. I wonder if the guests have worked at all with the leadership in Menasha. And secondly, when a community is working on a downtown revitalization, what's the value of, let's say, one really successful anchor business? Does that motivate other vendors or merchants? And those are my questions.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, let's start with Aaron here.
Yeah, we were working with Menasha. They're not currently in the program any longer because they had some staff turnover, but they've certainly been doing some great things. Regarding an anchor, if you have an anchor, yes, that's a tremendous asset. Can you recruit an anchor as your strategy to revitalization? Not as much. That's a lot harder to put all your eggs in one basket like that. But if you have one, it's great. And anything can be an anchor. A great run library can be an anchor.
I think the anchor concept is pretty important, especially for restaurants. There's a guy named David Milder who has a blog called The Downtown Curmudgeon, and he has some good data that he shares all the time. And he looks into the future, and he talks about the future of downtown restaurants as being an important niche, a critical niche for downtown development. Not so much retail, because retail has these pressures from Amazon and you know, big box stores. But when you collect a number of restaurants in one place, you develop a critical mass of activity helping to establish kind of a central social district in your community. And that, combined with parks and pavilions, makes downtown a place where people want to go. And I think what we're talking about here is what things can we do to downtown to make people want to go down there.
And Kate, does that help?
Yeah, absolutely. Our town is really, it's been really slow going, but the downtown is you know, coming back. And we do now have a few anchor businesses and some folks who've really committed themselves to staying. And so, yeah, that's very good information. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate the call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. We are talking today with Erin Welty of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. She's a downtown development account manager. Bill Ryan works with UW Extension's Center for Community and Economic Development. Our guests, questions about your own downtown? What's the current state of it? Do you have some ideas? Problem areas you want to talk about? Give a call. 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Net. Tomorrow at this time, Dr. Sandy Sawchuk joins us to talk about your pet's health. Right now, taking a look at some new ideas for downtowns here in Wisconsin with Aaron Welty and Bill Ryan. Really pleased to have them along. And again, if you have questions, what's the state of your downtown? Do you think it's important to keep downtowns strong? What's worked to revitalize your main street? I'd love to hear some of those success stories as well. Call in 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. That's kind of interesting looking in the first part of your book, the paper that you put together. And by the way, paper is kind of, it's fairly, what is it, 40 pages, something like that?
26 or 30.
20, somewhere between 20, around 30 pages, let's call it. The mix of businesses that you find. Talk about the surveys. You looked at cities with a, say, 1,000 to 2,000 population, and then you looked at cities with a 2,000 to 5,000 population and just sort of compared what you see in those communities is kind of interesting.
Yeah, we did this for every community in the state. We went in with GIS and pulled out all the businesses in the downtown area of every city in the state. And then we segmented it into different population groups. And what we found is small towns had mostly taverns, restaurants, and hair care and type health, personal care type stores. We ran the same numbers for the other kind of cities in the state. And for the most part, even larger cities had the most common businesses were restaurants, taverns, and places to look good.
Yeah, beauty salons.
Yeah, beauty salons. So Wisconsin's a state of eating, drinking, and looking good.
And it's all stuff you can't buy online. You can't buy those experiences on Amazon. You have to go downtown.
Yeah, you know, that makes sense. But I tell you, I wouldn't have guessed beauty salons.
Yeah, that's a big one for downtowns.
In that top area, but I don't know why not. But then we, you know, then down the line, grocery stores, not a lot. Typically, maybe you're going to find one. And it takes it's hard to have in a community, small communities like that. I guess it's pretty tough to have two or three competing grocery stores.
Larry, I was driving up north with my wife about 3 weeks ago, and we stopped in a town of 2,000 people in central Wisconsin. And I decided to go into the library to take an inventory of what kind of businesses were in town back in 1965. So I dusted off the microfiche and did my hour work of research. And I realized back in 1965, this town of 2,000 people had like 25 retail businesses. Ben Franklin store, apparel store, shoe stores even, a TV repair place that sold Magnavox TVs, I think, and on. So I left the library and went outside with my clipboard and I counted businesses downtown. And today there's only like four or five retailers. So we've gone from, you know, 25 to five or four. And those four or five may not have been that active either. You know, they're really struggling too. So I think retail is not really the answer for downtowns. We're looking at a mixed use of uses for downtown. Even big chains are not looking at expanding their retail mix, their business mix too much. With the they're looking at shorter footprints and things like that for their new stores. So they're more discriminating in where they locate their big stores today.
Bill, I can just see your wife rolling her eyes. Oh, there he goes again.
She puts up in the well.
Off to the library. Oh, my goodness. But still, there are businesses down there, but they're just different businesses than what we had.
They're different, and they're serving today's need. But, you know, we can't change with the consumer. The consumer wants to get on the highway and travel 30 minutes or 40 minutes to a big box store, and that's just the way we are. It's also the deliberate consumer that David Myler talks about in his blog. The person that's coming out of the Great Recession who doesn't have a whole lot of discretionary money to spend on things that he doesn't need. And so they're very focused on what they spend their money on, and they're very practical. And that bodes well for some of the big box stores, but it doesn't bode well for the smaller downtown merchant that has a smaller inventory and perhaps higher prices in certain cases.
So you see the services and the entertainment and things that provide a value, and maybe they sell some stuff along with it. I mean, most businesses have multiple line items, but you have to provide something more than just a shopping experience.
Yeah, and sometimes, I'm thinking about my own. Of course, it's not a downtown, but I live over on the east side of Madison, and in 5 minutes, I can walk to the Jenny Street Market. And I wind up buying a lot of groceries at that market. Probably not, I'm sure not everything, but I buy a lot there. One, it's my community. and number two, it's really convenient. And, you get to know the people and it's friendly and kind of nice to stop in there. But that can't always work downtown.
No, it is a positive trend, though. We're seeing a lot more residential being built downtown, both serving baby boomers that are wanting to retire and walk to things and younger folks. And we know that people spend 200% more if they can walk somewhere because it's more convenient and fun. So it's a great trend for the future that we might be able to support more retail.
Yeah, I love that 5 minute, 30 mile walk, and there you are for some great groceries. Fred in Madison, your turn. Thanks for calling, Fred.
Hi, this is a good show. I want to ask about a specific building, quite a famous building, the Hotel Retlaw in downtown Fond du Lac. It closed in 2015. I stayed there early in 2015, and I was very impressed, but I could see that it would probably go out of business. And I just wondered if your guest could tell us anything about that particular building, and is there a chance it will reopen and not be destroyed or not be redecorated to the point where it loses its character? And its character is around 1920. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling.
I have good news for you in that I know that they are pursuing new ownership that would potentially utilize historic tax credits for the property, which would preserve a lot of that character. So they are actively working on it. You know, businesses close for all kinds of reasons, usually having to do with ownership and management, not necessarily the market that they're in. So there is people working on that project actively.
Boy,
sometimes these downtown hotels also have higher operating expenses because they were built 100 years ago, and they had full kitchens and a lot of staff requirements. So, but they also have the opportunity to increase their prices quite a bit more over suburban hotels. And so if they can reposition this property in a way that elevates its rate, it could do well.
Well, you know, if you've got business downtown and you want to go and you don't want to be running, you know, you come into town and you're going to stay overnight, it's, to be perfectly honest as well, a lot more handy to be right next to or nearby where your business is going to be done.
And restaurants and other amenities.
Yeah, and the restaurants and everything else that goes along with it. Steve in Fond du Lac actually here with something about the Rhett Law. Let's go there.
Hi there. I'm a part of a group business we own called Legendary Hotels.
Uh-huh.
And we are actually doing the renovation of the Rhett Law in Fond du Lac. So I just thought I'd give a quick call and update on that project. It's we'll probably be in construction in May and hope to be completed before the end of the year, sometime in November. One of the points I wanted to make, and I was just about to call in, and I heard the question about the Rhett Law. I just wanted to emphasize how important it is that the federal and state historic tax credits, the state historic tax credits in particular, Governor Walker, I know, has them in to be reduced in the budget. And this type of renovation, it's a $25 million renovation to restore the Rhett Law back to its original glory. And you know, without the 20% state matching historic tax credits, the project is just not viable. It doesn't make sense on paper. So I'd encourage folks to, you know, as it relates to downtowns and historic buildings, to, you know, to contact their representatives and make sure that, you know, that isn't cut from the state budget, because it really... it makes no sense on paper, and you wouldn't be able to get the financing. It's just too expensive to rehabilitate a historic building like that under the auspices of the State Historic Preservation Office and the National Park Service, and really do it the right way if those tax credits were not in place.
Yeah.
So what we do is we sell those tax credits and then put the money from every penny of it back into the renovation of the project itself. So,
thank you. Yeah, that's I can see the well. And if you don't have it, it doesn't get built, or it doesn't get refurbished, and then it
right.
And then it
can, yeah. It's actually, you look at those old buildings, and you know, it's less expensive to tear them down and build new than it is to do the type of renovation that we. You know, we're going to be positioning this hotel as a four-diamond, four-star property the way that it was when it opened in 1923. And you know, obviously no one wants to see those buildings sit empty and or be torn down. So it's a complicated, difficult development to do. But we've had great support from the city of Fond du Lac and the county of Fond du Lac local business leaders and community leaders there, and it will impact the downtown dramatically, to the tune of about, you know, 40,000 new visitors in downtown that we anticipate spending dollars in the downtown Fond du Lac area.
Steve, thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate the call, but you give us a lot to talk about there, actually, in terms of Bill, in terms of the cooperation that Steve talked about. As an example, you need people who in a community who are, you know, willing to step up and help. And he gave a variety of groups within that community of Fond du Lac that were stepping up. And that sort of probably applies in many instances.
Yeah, cooperation is critical in these kind of large ventures. What's also critical is understanding the market and doing a detailed feasibility study of the market for a lodging operation like this, because the change in room rate might suddenly make the deal a bad deal. So they got to keep up with the new competition coming on board and what the market is saying about it. So I'm an advocate for any kind of project like this to have a thorough and ongoing market analysis of the downtown area and the hotel industry. On the good side, though, there are a lot of smaller cities like Fond du Lac that are getting new hotels in their downtown area.
Yeah, and it's great. Steve, thanks a lot. Thanks again for calling. I really appreciate it. And we'll take your call, too, 1-800-642-1234. Steve is talking about, you know, this is a, I forget how many millions he was talking about there, about 20 million or whatever it was. A lot of the businesses that you work with aren't in the $20 million range at all, are they, Aaron?
They are not. I think that the average new small business local entrepreneur starts with $5,000 in their pocket. And that was something that really came out clear in the study, too, was that 3/4 of these people were starting the business based on their own personal equity, business equity, credit cards. There's not a lot of small business resources, or they're not aware of the ones that are out there. So it is something that is a challenge for small communities. The cost of starting up might be smaller, and you know, the ability to gain local traction is quicker if you do a good job, but it's certainly financially difficult.
Do you guys help let's say I want to start a small business downtown Watertown or wherever, can I come to you, Bill, and say, can you help me out here? I'm going to figure out whether or not this is a worthwhile operation.
Well, if it's an individual business, that's really the work of the small business development centers around the state.
Okay.
And they handle the individual clients. If it's a group of businesses and looking at a direction for downtown, then they would come to us for a market analysis assistance. And we do a community market analysis, and part of that is the downtown and business districts in the community. And so, in a way, we're kind of looking at the feasibility of different ventures, but we're not calling it a feasibility study. It's a market analysis that leads to an economic development plan for downtown.
Uh-huh. And Aaron, how do you guys work in on this?
Well, the communities that are part of our programs, we do a lot of ongoing educational opportunities. And some of those are, we just had a restaurant consultant come to some of our communities. We do some merchandising workshops. So we try to provide assistance to both existing and prospective businesses that are within a community that's participating. So we know they have the support locally to help them kind of continue on the process.
Okay. Anne in Kenosha, it's your turn. Hi, Anne. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to follow up on the hotel aspect of the conversation.
Yeah.
My husband and I are at the point now where, you know, finances and such, that we want to get away occasionally, but we can't go to Italy.
Yeah.
We don't want to stay home. We want to look for a place, you know, in state that has an interesting experience. So when we decided we wanted to go visit Tin Chimneys, we would never have considered really making that trip if it hadn't been for the very nice hotel in Delafield that we got to stay in, and then spent that night exploring the downtown, eating in the downtown area. You know, I think if you're going to base your downtown appeal on tourism and you don't have a really nice, fun hotel to stay at, that's a missing piece. I wouldn't have wanted to go stay someplace 20 miles away and then go downtown and try and find parking, et cetera.
I think some good points there, aren't they, Bill?
Yeah, I think that tourism especially is an important issue in small-town, downtown revitalization. But the community has to have something to sell to the tourist. Otherwise, you know, why bring it into your town if there's nothing, no hotels or no restaurants to accommodate them? So the downtown development process should also look at tourism very closely to make sure that there's the infrastructure to capture tourism spending.
Well, I think Anne's point about matching the tourist to the type of hotel. I mean, in Darlington, they have the ATV trail, and so they have the really nice campground right downtown on the river, and that meets the needs of those tourists. But so matching your lodging with the folks that you can and hope to attract is critical.
Yeah, it makes good sense. Thank you so much, Anne.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call very much. Bob in Madison has something for us. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, hi. I live in Madison, and in Madison we're in this vicious circle of municipal regulations that require a certain number of parking places for any development, be it in downtown or in the suburbs. And the developers say that they can't build downtown without a subsidy from the city to be able to provide the parking, because the parking, of course, is surface out in the suburbs. And what happens is that they get TIF money to build the parking, and the city ends up subsidizing the parking for these developers downtown for parking that may not be needed, given that there is already mass transit. So it's a big development conundrum that we have in cities like Madison and, I assume, Milwaukee as well.
Yeah, I bet the Milwaukee probably has similar kinds of issues going on, Bill.
Yeah, parking is a complicated matter. It's a supply-demand situation that I'm not fully up to date on what's happening in Madison with this. But I also know in some smaller towns, parking is a perception. They think that parking on Main Street is hard to find, and it really isn't. It's kind of a perception that they have.
It's also a financing tool when you talk about the bigger projects. Mortgage lenders like to have parking for your project because they know that you're going to need some of it. So it's a really complicated issue on a lot of fronts.
Yeah, and I'm just when we're thinking about parking, it reminded me of some work I did way back when in Rice Lake, Wisconsin, and I thought, I'm talking to the mayor up there one time, and the mayor said, boy, whoever had the idea to make that Main Street as wide as it was sure thinking ahead. That's probably one of the widest Main Streets I've ever seen. And in terms of parking, it's wonderful because of the way they can park cars on the Main Street.
It is pretty wide. We actually just did a streetscape pilot project there this year to do some parklets to slow traffic, because bigger streets mean you feel like you can go faster as you want. It was successful. We lowered, I think, average speeds by 5 miles per hour by putting in some parklets for the weekend, and people stopped to see what was going on there.
Yeah, for sure. But most of the towns, the old towns that, you know, they were built, the main streets are fairly narrow. You get right down to it. And, you can't knock those buildings down to make the roads wider. So we had Aaron on Facebook said that breweries and restaurants with locally sourced ingredients are a more homemade feel to them. And this person's talking about Nina, has really taken downtown Nita to a different level. I don't know if you guys have worked in Nita at all or not, but
I've driven through. They're doing a lot of great stuff. There is a trend toward the locally sourced. Again, it's something that you can't get somewhere else. So if you can create a concentration of it downtown and have that cluster and draw the tourists and people who appreciate it, you're going to do pretty well for yourself.
Yeah, one of our businesses in our publication is called Waterhouse Foods in Lake Mills, and this is a community that really embraces this new business that's been in operation for 7 years, roughly. But they focus on quality foods and local foods, local source foods.
And they also have a winery and a brewery going in, or a winery open and a brewery going in, too. So, yeah, it's a cluster.
Yeah, it's a nice place. I get to Lake Mills pretty often, so it's a pretty nice restaurant. Describe what you've got in this publication before we get too far, so people know what they can learn from.
Well, there's about 25 examples of businesses that have occupied spaces in downtowns that would otherwise probably go empty. And we kind of clustered them into different themes that they seem to represent. So there's the dining theme, which seems to make sense in many small communities. There's health and wellness businesses, like pharmacies. There's a pharmacy in a town of 1,200 in Iowa, and they had that pharmacy there not because they can afford to have a loss in the operation, but because they can telecommute or telefarm with a pharmacist elsewhere in the state. And he comes on the screen, like a video chat, and can dispense pharmacy products from a distance. And it allows this pharmacy to operate in a small town, which otherwise couldn't happen. Health wellness is the second one. Third one, destination lifestyle retail. I'm thinking of a place called Petals and Patches, or Patches and Petals in Belleville, Wisconsin. It's a destination retailer that attracts people in quilting. They have bus tours coming into town for their quilting shop, and they have selling classes and clubs and events. So it's kind of a lifestyle business that serves not just the local market, but a much broader market around the Midwest. Local history, their businesses like the Blue Door Inn in Alma, Wisconsin, It's a B&B, assorted 1857 building with a blacksmith shop that's been converted into the kitchen or dining area. And it builds upon the charm of the community. It's a business that supplements the experience of downtown Alma with the railroad track going by and the river in front of you. And then the arts is very important, too, in many of these small towns. We have an example of a place in Frederick, Wisconsin, called the Red Iron and Michael Rout Ironworks. And there they actually bought a dilapidated building for not much money, and they fixed it up into a nice anchor for downtown, where they have a showroom and a studio, and it's an attractive addition. So the arts are important for downtown.
Yeah, I noticed that there were several examples, or some nice examples, I guess I should say, of arts or communities that have sort of embraced the arts in their downtown, and that has really helped helped the businesses and helped the communities. And there's some pretty nice communities that are really founded almost around their arts for their downtown,
right. Yeah.
which is very, very cool. The one that caught my eye was the Horseradish Food Truck and Alley Cafe. That's another business, a different kind of business that's in a down. I can't remember what
it's
town.
In Princeton.
Princeton.
Yep. Yeah, they didn't have a great restaurant, and they had a vacant lot. So Matt opened up a food truck next door to his shop, and people can now shop and take lunch and spend that much longer. There's a couple of really great food trucks. Viroqua has a food truck in a parking lot. So if you don't have a space, it costs a lot of money to open a new restaurant. If you don't have that kind of cash, you can open a food truck and build from scratch.
It also focuses on local foods, too.
Mm-hmm. I can remember more than once stopping in Jefferson, Wisconsin at a hamburger stand that is it just kind of stuck on a corner, and driving through it, I'm looking at the long lines that are of people that are waiting to get something to eat at that little food stand, which I think they've made into a historic landmark because it's been there so darn long.
Yeah.
it's pretty cool. How do people get a copy of this publication, by the way?
Well, they can just Google for Innovative Downtown Businesses.
Innovative Downtown Businesses.
And then there'll be a link on that page to open up a PDF version of this working draft copy.
And I think we have, Jill, do we have that up on our Facebook page? Yeah, she doesn't have it up yet, but she'll have it up in a minute or two. And so you can go to my Facebook page. Our Facebook page title is The Larry Mueller Show. You can click on that, and it's filled with kind of uplifting. You know, you look at these and you think, God, there's a good idea, and there's another good idea, and there's another good idea. Wonder what I could do in my own community. You know, it gets you thinking.
Yeah.
It gets you thinking. And there's a little bit of data in the front part of it as well. Well, this has been a real pleasure. I think before the show, I told you my PhD work was on how do you get plan for change in communities and how do you get citizen input into planning in a community, and this kind of goes right along with some of the work that I've been involved with over time, and it's great work. And I know from my own experiences, it's a lot of fun to see successes and people really, really having great success in new businesses and revitalizing their downtowns. Thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
Aaron Welty is the Downtown Development Account Manager with the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Bill Ryan works with UW Extension Center for Community and Economic Development. And that publication or paper that they've written, it's about 30 pages, Creative Uses for Downtown Buildings in Small Towns, and with a whole host of really nice examples of what other people have done in their community. So what about your community? Take a look at that publication, and maybe you can come up with something and make yourself a little money and help your community at the same time. Well, coming up, we're going to turn our attention to the weather and to climate. It must be the last Monday of the month, because that's when our weather guys, John Martin and Steve Ackerman, stop by. That's coming up next on the Ideas Network.